It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
The worst consequences are that these youth can serve their time in the general population of our adult jails and our adult prisons here in Virginia. Those youth are at great risk for physical and sexual assault, as you can imagine. The rates of suicide are also very high for youth who serve with adults. They don't have access to the educational, vocational, and therapeutic services that are available in our juvenile justice system. So the grand kind of result of all of that risk and all of that denial is that these youth come out of adult systems reoffending at higher rates. So our system of trying and incarcerating youth with adults isn't working.
Kate Duval from the Just Children program talks about reforming the system that allows children to be tried as adults without a juvenile court judge even determining whether or not this is necessary. And during this week's question and answer session, we discuss the legal grounds for divorce and the legal step you have to follow in order to get one. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 69, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. On November 24, an Henrico County General District Court judge ruled that trespassing charges against Virginia Organizing Project Executive Director Joe Zakos are to be dismissed after 6 months, with no further incidents and no further visits to Anthem's property. Evidence submitted by the defense showed that customers are permitted in the main entrance, where Zakos attempted to enter Anthem's Richmond headquarters in July, and that Zakos was connected by cell phone at the time of arrest, waiting for an Anthem representative. Judge Neil Steverson chose not to convict Zakos for trespassing on his own insurance company's property. Zakos commented that even though he is barred from visiting Anthem's property for 6 months, quote, "This is not a problem, since they rarely listen to their customers' concerns anyway. Being officially barred is perhaps a more formal exemplification of Anthem's existing customer service policy. Don't ask questions, just pay your bill." Unquote. In other news, in a November 20 decision, a general district court judge in Newport News has ruled that Allied Cash Advance is only entitled to 12% interest per year on its line of credit loans instead of the contract rate of 304% interest per year. The judge noted that the Consumer Finance Act clearly states that no person shall loan less than $6,000 for non-business purposes at greater than 12% interest per year unless they have a license under the Act, in which case they may charge up to 36% interest per year. The Consumer Finance Act does not cover banks, credit unions, and other savings institutions, but Allied Cash Advance does not fall under any of these exceptions. Although Allied Cash Advance could charge any rate they wanted if they loaned more than $6,000 or loaned for a business purpose, because they loaned less than $6,000 for a non-business purpose, the judge ruled they were limited to 12% interest per year. No appeal has been filed. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Hey, gonna let it go. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is hearsay. Hearsay is a statement made out of court that is offered in court as evidence to prove the truth of the matter asserted. In a court proceeding, the judge or jury must determine whether evidence offered as proof is believable. Three rules help make this determination. First, a witness generally must swear or affirm to tell the truth. Second, the witness must be personally present at trial to allow the testimony to be observed firsthand. Third, the witness is subject to cross-examination. The hearsay rule prohibits most statements made outside a courtroom from being used as evidence because such statements normally aren't made under oath, the witness can't be observed firsthand, and can't be cross-examined. Lawyers learn the many exceptions to this rule. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and hearsay is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for this week's question. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Frank, and I'm from Chesterfield.
Welcome to the show, Frank. What are we talking about today?
Divorce.
Okay. What question do you have for us?
How would I go by getting a divorce?
In Virginia, there are five reasons for a divorce. Two of them don't require any waiting period. Three of them do. The two that don't require any waiting period are adultery, or if your spouse is convicted of a felony and sentenced to more than a year in jail. The three that do require a waiting period are physical cruelty, which requires a waiting period of 1 year, or desertion, or constructive desertion. Your spouse's behavior was so bad that you were forced to leave, but again, that requires a waiting period of 1 year. And then lastly, there's an uncontested, no-fault divorce, which requires only a 1 year waiting period, which you easily meet. Now, you can get a divorce after a 6-month waiting period if you have a written separation agreement and no minor children of the marriage. You don't have any minor children, but you don't need a 6-month separation. You've got well more than the year. Do you know where your wife lives in Massachusetts?
Yes, I do.
You have an actual physical address for her?
Yes, I do.
Attorney would draw up the papers, file it with the court, and probably send papers to your wife in Massachusetts asking that she sign and return them, accepting their service and waiving or giving up any type of notice. Do you think she would be willing to do that?
Positively.
Okay. If she were, that would make it a lot simpler. If not, it wouldn't stop the divorce. It would just slow it down a little bit, because then we would have to find a process server to legally serve or deliver the paper to your wife in Massachusetts. After that, you have to wait usually 3 weeks and sometimes just about a month or two after that to do what are called divorce depositions, where you and a witness go to the lawyer's office and you give testimony under oath about the marriage, about the separation, about the children, and other things that we've just discussed. That then is typed up and sent to the judge, who reviews everything, and if everything is in order, the judge will sign the final decree of divorce, send the parties copies, and you are officially divorced. Start to finish, from the time the lawyer begins to work on it until the time the divorce is granted, usually about 3 or 4 months. So this is something that I encourage you to do, and we'd be happy to assist you.
We'll be heading that away.
Okay, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
We're talking this week with Kate Duval. She is an attorney with the Just Children Program in Charlottesville, Virginia. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. You are involved with a campaign called Don't Throw Away the Key, which deals with juvenile justice. And I suppose most people assume that youth who were under the age of 18 and charged with crime are dealt with by the juvenile justice system, not the adult courts. But apparently that is not universally the case. Can you tell us how this happens?
Absolutely. It isn't universally the case. And there's actually three ways that a youth who's age 14 or over, and that's really young, 14 or over, can be tried as an adult and then incarcerated as an adult, so put into an adult prison. The first way that can happen is if a youth 14 or over is charged with murder or aggravated malicious wounding. In that case, it's essentially automatically a transfer up to adult court.
So there's no discretion there at all. That just happens by itself.
Absolutely. That happens by itself. The juvenile court judge does have a probable cause hearing in those cases, but probable cause, as you and I know and other attorneys who may be listening know, is really an easy threshold to meet. So in that case, the case goes all up to adult court. The second way that a case can end up in adult court is a youth 14 or over is charged with any crime that would be considered a felony if committed by an adult. In those cases, the juvenile court has a full hearing about the issue of whether this youth should be tried as an adult. They consider a list of factors, and they are given a social history by the probation court services unit in the court to consider also. And it's a full hearing. Both sides present evidence. Both sides have an opportunity to appeal at the end of that hearing.
And this is in front of, I assume, a juvenile and domestic relations court judge?
Absolutely, yep. And the third way that a youth's case can end up in adult court is by what's called prosecutorial certification. Fancy words for essentially the prosecutor makes the decision which youth, this youth or that youth, is going to be tried as an adult. There's a list of 12 crimes for which the prosecutor gets to make the decision in those cases. They include violent crimes, rape, malicious wounding, and some other crimes also that aren't so serious. In those cases, the prosecutor files a notice to transfer, often very early on in the case, and doesn't have to consider anything other than the youth's age and the crime they were charged with. There's a probable cause hearing, again, one of these low threshold, essentially pass-through hearings. And upon the finding of probable cause, the case is transferred up to circuit court.
So in other words, once the prosecutor makes that decision to seek a transfer, it's pretty much automatic.
It really is automatic. And the reason why, not only is a probable cause hearing a low threshold, but also if probable cause isn't found, in this case or in the first route that I described, automatic, the prosecutor has the opportunity to direct indict the youth in circuit court, which means they essentially go in the back door to circuit court if the hearing doesn't work in their favor. And there's no way to appeal that process. There's no way for the youth to take it back and get a court's kind of check and balance on that.
So how many youth a year are being sent to adult courts?
There are 700 youth a year who are convicted as adults in Virginia. We think that third route that I described, prosecutorial certification, is being used most often. The reason we think that is because these transfer reports, that social history that I described being used by judges when they make the decision, the number of those reports that are being done by court services units have drastically dropped off over the past several years.
Well, I gather that this used to not be the case. This prosecutorial certification used to not be the law. What happened? What changed?
Yeah, so in the mid-1990s, there was a lot of hubbub, for lack of a better word, around the issue of youth crime. Juvenile crime rates had been on the rise in the late 80s and early 90s, and the media picked up on it. And the media really created this kind of frantic fear around the issue. And the legislature and the political leaders in Virginia acted on that fear. And they passed laws that lowered the age for trial as an adult from 15 to 14. And they also made this three-pronged, route to adult court from juvenile court. The thing that we found out since then is really that crime rates started to drop off right when these laws were being passed. So before they really even had the opportunity to have any effect. And also that the rising crime rates among youth really weren't as bad as the media had portrayed them.
Now, I understand that the Legal Aid Justice Center recently released a study on youth who were basically certified up to adult courts. Could you tell us some of the highlights of that study?
We did. We released a study last week, so just about a week ago today. And the study, for those of you who may be interested, is available at www.don'tthrowawaythekey.org. It's all one word, no apostrophe and don't. But the highlights of that study, there's several. One looks directly at the data that we found available here in Virginia, and that's that the youth who are being tried and convicted as adults are really not the worst of the worst. The vast majority of youth who are going through this process, about 33%, are being charged with robbery. In Virginia, robbery includes a broad spectrum of crimes. It can be strong-armed robbery, which is playground bullying in some instances. You know, another kid grabbing another kid, threatening to punch him and stealing his iPod, that's robbery. But so is armed robbery, which is a very serious crime and may in some cases necessitate trial as an adult. But all of those, that whole spectrum of crimes can result in a trial as an adult. Another interesting finding that we came across in researching the report was that the youth who are going through the system, after trial, 1 in 5 are getting put on probation. So if these are the worst of the worst youth, if these are the ones who should be in adult prisons or going through the adult system, why are they ending up on probation? Probably because after a circuit court judge has looked at their case and heard all the facts, they're deciding that this is really a youth who would do better with the rehabilitative services that are available in the community, or just really isn't a youth whose crime and circumstances deserves prison time.
And I gather that there are alarming racial disparities between who gets certified up and who doesn't get certified up.
Yes, there are. The disproportionate minority contact, so the number of African-American youth who are impacted by these laws is overwhelming. African-American youth make up about 20-23% of our youth population in Virginia, and they make up over 83% of the youth who were tried as adults and who are in the custody of the Department of Juvenile Justice.
Well, now, you mentioned that although this is supposed to be used for the worst of the worst, in fact, it's not being used for the worst of the worst, and in fact, 1 in 5 are put directly on probation. What are the bad consequences of these referrals up to the adult court?
The worst consequences are that these youth can serve their time in the general population of our adult jails and our adult prisons here in Virginia. Those youth are at great risk for physical and sexual assault, as you can imagine. The rates of suicide are also very high for youth who serve with adults. They don't have access to the educational, vocational, and therapeutic services that are available in our juvenile justice system. So the grand kind of result of all of that risk and all of that denial is that these youth come out of adult systems reoffending at higher rates. So our system of trying and incarcerating youth with adults isn't working. That's really the big consequence for our communities. For the youth themselves, they come out of the system with an adult felony conviction, which then seriously hampers their ability to get a job, to get public education, to get loans to get an education. They can't live in public housing, a whole litany of things that will follow them for the rest of their lives.
So in other words, these youth may be coming out of adult jails in their 20s, their 30s. They may have been in there since they were 15, 16, 17. They've not finished high school. They have no employment record. They're basically back on the streets where they were sentenced from maybe 5, 10, 15 years earlier. And there's really nothing for them.
Absolutely. And what can we expect for them, when they don't have those opportunities or those skills that the rest of us are obtaining when we're in, public schools or just working. They're also, when they compete with their peers, so peers, youth who went through the juvenile system, they're not really competitive with those youth because youth who are in juvenile correctional centers, the juvenile version of prison, they get high school. They can get a high school diploma. They can take college classes. They have much more vocational training. The therapy available to them is also really important here because youth are different from adults. They need different services, and those services are available in the juvenile correctional system.
Well, so what do you say to the critics who would say, well, you know, for those youth who have committed serious crimes, I mean, they do have to be punished for those crimes.
Absolutely, and that's absolutely true. And believe me, I work with kids who are in the juvenile correctional centers in Virginia. I spend time there. I visit my clients there, and it is not... it's not a playground. It's not a cakewalk. It's serious business, and it's serious prison. They're just serving their time with their peers, their peer age group, and they're also getting appropriate services. The other thing is that our recommendation for the way to change the system in a way that would make it more fair and effective, and we think deal with a lot of these problems, is to do away with prosecutorial certification. It's not to do away with the opportunity for any of these youth to face adult criminal charges. It's to make the process a more fair and effective one by having juvenile court judges make the decisions in all of these cases.
And I gather there's a proposal to do precisely that and a hearing coming up fairly soon to take the testimony of the public on that. Would you tell us about that, please?
Yep. We hope that there's a proposal. There is a public hearing of the Virginia State Crime Commission, which is a legislative body that's been studying transfer for the past year, on December 15th at 10 a.m. in the Virginia General Assembly building, which is just here in Richmond. It's at the corner of 9th and Broad Streets, and it's a public hearing, so open to anyone who would like to be there and is interested in this topic. The Crime Commission has been studying transfer for the past year. We anticipate that there will be legislative recommendations made at that hearing. So changes to the law, proposals on how to change the law will be brought up at that hearing. And we hope that those proposals will match what our recommendations are. Our recommendation is broadly supported by juvenile justice professionals. Overwhelming majorities of juvenile justice professionals, juvenile court judges, probation officer, unit directors, public defenders, have all voiced their support in a survey of this recommendation. The only group that isn't in support of it was the Commonwealth's attorneys, prosecutors.
And if someone wants to know more about this, learn more information, get involved, how would they do that?
The best way to do that is to follow us on Facebook. If you're a Facebook person, you can just search Don't Throw Away the Key and become a fan. Another way to do it is to visit our website, www.don'tthrowawaythekey.org, or to give me a call. I'd be happy to talk to you, and my number's 434-977-0553.
Thank you very much. We've been talking with Kate Duval, who is an attorney with the Just Children Program in Charlottesville, Virginia. Thank you very much for being on the show, Kate.
Thanks.
This week's top three tips are about foster care. The first tip is that foster care provides temporary care for children who can't live with their parents or other relatives. The local Department of Social Services, or DSS, takes legal responsibility, called legal custody, for a child when it's not safe for that child to live with parents or other relatives right now. The second tip is that most children in foster care live with foster families, but some children live in group homes or other residential settings. The third tip is that after a child is in foster care for 60 days, DSS must file a plan with the court setting forth the goals for the child and the parents, the date for reaching those goals, and the services DSS will provide to the child and the parents. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips about foster care.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Virginia's 2010 legislative session begins on January 13, and pre-filing of proposed bills is in full swing. Tune in next Wednesday at 12 noon for a special one-hour live broadcast as we talk with Virginia Poverty Law Center attorneys Jill Hankin, Jim Nagels, and Ty Jones about health, housing, unemployment compensation, and other public benefits issues confronting the General Assembly next year. That's Law for the Rest of Us, next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wainwright.
My Lord.